Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. Uzbekistan's new president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, just did what was long expected. He fired his powerful rival and national security chief, Rustam Inayatov. Depending from which perspective you look at, Inayatov was a shadowy figure known for many things: extremely powerful, influential, feared, notorious, kingmaker, but above all, he was a real survivor. Now, the biggest question is, how did this firing happen and why now? And what does this say about the country, about him and Mirziyoyev's administration going forward? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Alisher Siddiq, director of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. They are in Prague. In Bishkek, we have Steve Severlow, who is the Central Asia researcher for Human Rights Watch. And in Washington, D.C., we have Catherine Putz, who is the editor, the diplomat with keen eye on Central Asia. Welcome on board, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Very nice to have you. Okay, Alisher, let's start with you. So Inayatov is gone. What was your feeling when you heard this? Surprised, shocked, or?
In fact, you pointed out very correctly. It was long expected. It was nothing to surprise about. It was planned. It was we anticipated. However, that doesn't make it kind of not important. This is the second most important news after the death of President Islam Karimov. That's right. For sure. Right. Yeah. Then the rumors and the information that we are still getting and we have been getting since the past months was very active. Inayatov kind of filed his resignation to president, and we were expecting that he would sign it soon and will be announced. It's still not announced officially, though. I mean, it was, but with a little delay, you know, after almost the whole day we knew about it, and then it was announced. Again, Inayatov's kind of a stay for over 1 year after the death of President Karimov was reason for a lot of criticism towards Mirziyoyev, saying about that he's reckless, you know, that he has no principles, that he's sort of a weak. Yes, indeed, and it was pretty much difficult task for Mirziyoyev to get the whole control of the country now and clear the way for long-term ruling, which is the plan, seemingly. So now Inayatov was not just simply thrown out, but he was appointed as senator, and that would give him a lot of protection from persecution, from criminal persecution. And of course, a person who kept the position of top security official, you cannot assume that this guy wouldn't have any compromising materials over anyone in the country. So it's still very diehard person, still very difficult to bring the situation further over what happened.
Alisher, when I'm listening to you, I get kind of a message, especially about the compromising materials that he might have. Is he totally out, or still we expecting him to be player in this or the other way?
Let's not forget that Rustam Inayatov, he has two sons, and there's a lot of businesses, high-profile business structures in the country. The guy controlled really all branches of the government. And the guy really has a big empire underneath. So it's not just simply, you know, taking him out of this position will not immediately destroy the whole empire. It is the richest empire that you can assume.
Okay, Bruce, so what's your reading? You know, we regarded this man as untouchable for some time, and this suddenly, here you go, he was at least fired from the ministry that he had for so long. In your opinion, how did this firing happen?
Just to, you know, go back to how Mirziyoyev even got picked, I mean, it was, you know, it was Rustam Azimov, the finance minister, and Rustam Inayatov, the security chief, and then him, right? So, okay, so now he's in, and they all decided it's Mirziyoyev. You still got these two other guys who were just mentioned as potentially being able to fill the spot that you now have as president. It can't be a very comfortable feeling, I imagine. It shows that he worked at this gradually and consistently, you know, and you just have to look at some of the moves he made. He started by changing a lot of what appear to be like lower level officials, but we're talking about, you know, police chiefs and prosecutor generals and stuff out in the provinces and the districts and things like that. But he Mirziyoyev kind of gradually worked his way up to changing provincial governors and ministers even. And of course, he got rid of, or at least kind of sent off, Inayatov's right-hand man, Shukrat Gulamov, a little more than a year ago. So he was working at kind of undercutting Inayatov's position for a while. And you had a feeling that, you know, sooner or later, and I think we were even talking about this, that sooner or later there would be a competition. Now, Rustam Azimov was gone as of summer last year. And so all the focus went to Inayatov as being, you know, the other potential rival or someone who could possibly oppose Mirziyoyev's vision of how to redo Uzbekistan. And there's been a lot of speculation that Inayatov has opposed some of Mirziyoyev's decisions. So he finally got to the point where he had Mirziyoyev, got to the point where he had enough support and had whittled away enough of Inayatov's support that he could move forward and make the move. And I think it's important, you know, as Elishir pointed out, that this isn't like him ousting Inayatov. There was a lot of bargaining here. You know, the ultimate goal was he can't be head of security service anymore. But it wasn't like he was thrown out in the street or something, and that was never how this was going to go down. This was a compromise.
I like when the Minister of Interior was replaced. He was given advisory position, then he was sent to an academic position, and then finally, the day before yesterday, we heard that he's in jail. So what's that with Inayatov that he won't share the same fate?
Yeah, one, the interior minister hadn't been in his position as long as Rustam Inayatov. So you got to give him credit for that. Two, Rustam Inayatov has connections that go far outside of Uzbekistan, and I think the main one in this case is he's well connected to the FSB. I mean, his roots are in the KGB, going back into the 1970s, and cooperation between the Russian and Uzbek security services has always been fantastic, even if the governments didn't cooperate on much else. The security services cooperated very closely. So Inayatov has a lot of friends in the FSB, and it's not something you can totally forget about or try to ignore if you're going to make a move against him.
So should I understand that the arrangement to remove him from this position made with consulting powers beyond Uzbekistan? Is it what you are trying to say?
I wouldn't rule that out entirely. I think Mirziyoyev had his own personal goal in seeing Inayatov gone. You would have to take into consideration that there could be a Russian reaction to how he is removed from his position. And so you act carefully, and if you go with that scenario, then what they've done pretty much fits. You know, he's out, but he's not disgraced or in any way going to face any kind of prosecution or investigation or anything like that.
Was there any Russian reaction, or was there any reaction to this?
I mean, this is viewed very much internal matter. Yes, I don't think they will react. It's nothing to react there. So it is of high interest, one of the priority news, I imagine, on the Putin's table. But of course, we cannot see any reaction. The, you know, FSB is interested in continuation of the cooperation, and that is not in under any danger.
Katie, you were in Uzbekistan recently. Did you have this feeling that something is coming up involving Inayatov? Was there any discussion behind the doors, corridors?
Not that I knew of, but I think, as Alisher and Bruce have pointed out, this is certainly something that was being set up for a long time. Uh-huh. It definitely reads to me as sort of a negotiated exit from his security position, but like Bruce said, it seems unlikely anything terrible is going to happen to him. You know, he's not going to be prosecuted anytime soon, any of sort of our wishes, at least in terms of activists. But yeah, when I was in Uzbekistan in November, this was not something that I heard a lot of discussion about, but I think given that the pace of Mirziyoyev's reforms have been kind of chipping along at a good clip, at least on the top level in terms of stating large ideas, that it was going to eventually come to a head where Inayatov either had to go in order for further progress to be made. But I think, as Bruce pointed out, this was carefully done, sort of both from the top and dealing with Inayatov's sort of network of, you know, police chiefs and things like that. So this was a long time coming. I think Alisher said it, but none of us are particularly surprised that it happened, though we don't want to understate it's difficult. You don't want to understate how important it is, but you also don't want to overstate how important this is.
Mm. Yeah, as we all said, like it's something that was coming for a long time. But why this happened now? Maybe, Steve, you were kind of silent today, so maybe we can start with you. Why it happened now?
This is part of a plan. This is part of an ongoing conversation. This was something that everyone was talking about in the human rights community in the past few months as well, and expecting, and we saw, you know, commentators like Surati Kramov, who, you know, after the speech that Mirziyoyev gave on December 22nd, which was a real political earthquake, taking the SNB to task in the way he did for the first time, Surati Kramov came out with a very concrete proposal in response to President Mirziyoyev's speech, saying that, yes, now is the time to adopt a law that would actually regulate the conduct of the security services. And, you know, I think implied in that, of course, is that the architect of the whole system, Inayatov, would have to step aside. And, you know, as many people have discussed back during the electoral campaign, if we want to call it that, of late 2016, that was the first time when we got an inkling of the power struggle in a way, when Mirziyoyev made an announcement that he might be doing away with exit visas or relaxing visas for tourists to enter Uzbekistan. And then we heard shortly thereafter that that would be pushed off by several years. And the implication was that Inayatov was against that move. So there's been a tug of war. But I also want to add that I think, you know, at this moment, when I heard the news, it was, in a way, like Ali Shur said, it was a little bit of a recall to when we got the news about Karimov dying. There's a certain happiness at that moment, even though you understand that there's so much work to do if you really want to reform this system. But I thought, that was my first thought, of course, was happiness. And then my second thought was, this is really too late for thousands of people that have suffered under this 25-year history of repression. I thought about Andijan. I thought about, you know, so many of the prisoners that have landed in jail unlawfully and arbitrarily, and so many of the people that have been tortured. You know, there's so many cases of people that I've met who spent time in the basement of the SNB detention center, and the sorts of torture that they were subjected to were ultimately policies that this man signed off on and knew about. So I think, you know, aside from understanding the political calculus and how this fits into Mirziyoyev's grand strategy, it is sort of a moment. I think it is a moment to meditate and reflect a little bit on what this man actually did and the crimes that he's responsible for.
As you also mentioned, Steve, that a part of that is, thousands of people being put behind the bar, and he is the signatory behind many of those decisions. So since he's gone, do you expect those people to come out?
Well, we have seen things happening in that direction. We haven't seen everybody coming out, but, you know, we saw in August that the blacklists, which, to the information that we got, include about 17,000 people forced to report regularly for interrogations concerning allegations of extremism, was reduced to about 1,500. And we've seen, according to our data, at least 17 political prisoners released since Mirziyoyev assumed the interim presidency about 15 months ago. But we're talking about thousands and thousands of political prisoners. And, you know, we get conflicting signs. We heard, for example, reports that the imprisoned journalist Dilmurod Saidov would be released several months ago. And months go by, and we're still waiting for this, and seemingly this would be the kind of thing that Mirziyoyev could do with the stroke of a pen. And yet time goes on. And so, as Katie alluded to, in a way, there's a fast pace, but there's also a slow pace. And the hope, of course, is that if you pry the system open enough, and if you can have a public discussion about the SNB, if you can, you know, look at the SNB the way Germans looked at the Stasi after they opened the archives, that would be the kind of accountability process that might really bring about change. But obviously, we haven't seen evidence yet that we're there. But I think it's worth making those comparisons and analyzing things in that way to put pressure on the government to move in that direction.
But the thinking is here, Steve, that the position that he's given after his firing from the Ministry of National Security, he might even escape persecution at all. So, I mean, those people who were jailed with his decision, it seems that he cannot even, go to court and ask for, the word I'm trying to find here.
Accountability.
Yeah, accountability.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, that's why another one of my immediate reactions, I think, is that Inayatov still needs to face justice. our organization nominated him for the Global Magnitsky Law that he should have bank accounts frozen, he should have visas denied. The European Union put him on a ban list back in 2005 after the Andijan massacre for his responsibility for hundreds of civilian deaths. So I think it's the wrong move to give him immunity, and hopefully we can make a lot of noise about that, and I don't think we should stand for that.
Mm. At least this is my impression, that he might escape persecution. So what will happen if he was brought to judgment? Like, why should Mirziyayev afraid of doing that? Bruce, Alisher?
Well, I'll just put it, Andijan, which was already mentioned, happened when Iniata was of course the head of security, but Mirziyoyev was the prime minister.
Yeah,
you know, so this would give you an example of how tied together their fortunes are in some ways.
Hmm. Alisha, do you want to say something?
I imagine it's like a nuclear war between two nuclear powers. Yeah, so both will suffer severely. One will not survive, and the other will get a lot of damage. So Mirziyoyev is a kind of a person who lets people die by their natural causes. So that's, I think, what's the main thing. You know, the sick man on one side, 73-year-old, hardly moving around. Well, why would you do this, you know?
Mm. No, Alisher is absolutely right. There's so many skeletons in the closet, as both have said. And I'm also thinking back to when I was asking about the business environment in Tashkent and what it's like to be an entrepreneur. You know, still everyone you meet that has some connection to that world readily acknowledges that most of the people that are able to buy businesses, get businesses going, or make them successful are ones that are either moonlighting as business people and their day job is being at the SNB, or they have a really close connection to the SNB. And so by going for the jugular like that, going after Inayatov, you are, as Alisher earlier said, you're sort of, again, you're going right to the heart, not only of the politically repressive security apparatus, but also the whole economic structure of the state. So this is a large endeavor that Mirziyoyev is taking on. But I still have to say, it still takes guts to do what he did. So he has displayed some political courage, and I think that's the job now, is to again try to guide, push this process and apply pressure.
I'm still think without coming after him, how can Mirziyoyev write a clean page going forward? But
the thing is don't need to come after Inoyatov anymore for Mirziyoyev. The whole thing is to take over the businesses. Yeah. And that's what we anticipate. Mm. Mm. There is Inoyatov's relative who is the top tax authority. The next, what will happen? We're looking at this guy and the business structure under these people. So it's a very big network. So it's like a mafia thing. Yeah. So there might be the Don Corleone is gone. But that's the mafia is still there.
Yeah.
So it's a big thing. It's a bigger than just destroying one person.
I just want to lend one other idea. I think Alisher's political analysis is fascinating. I think if you're trying to, responding to your question, Mohammed, about how do you sort of move towards more accountability for the crimes of the SNB, occurred to me when I was in Uzbekistan meeting with released political prisoners that what one could do is hold hearings. One could invite people like Mohammed Bekjanov, Aghzam Turgunov, to speak about their experiences, about the torture they suffered at the hands of the SNB. I mean, as Alisher said, it's not all about Inayatov. It's about all the abuses. It's about the practices, the policies. And by uncovering those stories, and you know, we started to see slight signs of dialogue between civil society and the government. I mean, I was witness to a few meetings about the cotton issue that were unthinkable between government officials and civil society activists previously. Mm-hmm. And so if you take that a step further and you had people that spent time in SNB detention centers and prisons uncovering what they experienced and what they saw, that would be extremely powerful. And I think the momentum of that kind of testimony could really help Uzbekistan move forward to a much more open society.
Great. Thank you very much, Steve. This is what we know so far. And now the biggest question is what his removal means for Mirziyoyev's administration and for Uzbekistan going forward. And what is the next immediate step in the horizon after Inayatov is gone? So we will continue the discussion talking about this and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like the Majlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis we are discussing Inayatov's departure from Uzbekistan as National Security Ministry and what does this mean for him, for Uzbekistan, and Mirziyoyev's administration. Joining me in the discussion are Steve Severlo, Human Rights Watch's Central Asia researcher in Bishkek. Kathy Putz is joining us from Washington. She is the diplomat's editor. And Alisher Sadiq, head of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Uzbek service. And Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Uwazi, is with us from Prague. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the MHDC here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, colleagues. Now, just briefly, Alisher or Katie, whoever you want to jump in here. The guy that Inayatov was replaced with, do we know who he is?
We know who he is. He's been the... he's the former general prosecutor. I don't know terribly much about his background beyond that. I'm sure Alisher knows a little bit more.
Alisher, I heard from your reporting, I believe, that he is not coming from intelligence agencies, right?
Yes, we investigated a little bit of his about him, and obviously he was not involved in any kind of scandals or any controversial things, at least on, in the open sources. His father is one of the respected people. The guy is not from, has no KGB background. Yeah. He's coming from judiciary. So he's lawyer, basically. And he's new. And of course, he has less ties with Russia, you know, from one side. But it's not a big problem because it's mainly about what's going to happen next to National Security Service. You know, discussing ministers in Mirziyoyev's Uzbekistan is very tricky thing because we may have in 3 months another person. So it's changing them like something. So I wouldn't go very deep into his personality at this point, at least.
But do you expect backlash from National Security Ministry's colonels for this appointment?
No. National Security Service will be, as far as I understand, Mirziyoyev, when he was a prime minister, he had some grievances, very bad grievances from National Security Service. It seems like he's really hates it, harshly criticized the body. He said that you do nothing, you know nothing but torture. You know, he had the personal experience of being eavesdropped by National Security Services a lot. Yeah. Yes, and that's the reason why we have an former interior minister under persecution now, and the other one, the top general Sharif Khojaev in Jaslik, you know, the most notorious prison. So he has these grievances towards this towards this agency, and what he wants to do with it is to basically destroy it, weaken it, and destroy it not from the people's perspective. Of course, people in Uzbekistan wants this body to vanish. You know, nobody likes them. So what was announced that this that national security will be accountable to the parliament. So that's one of the things that is that's probably will happen. And they will be dealing with the day-to-day national security issues. And as we know, under President Karimov, who is from the Soviet past, who has a different kind of attitude towards KGB, he turned the KGB into a body that basically provides the security of the regime, of himself, Mirziyoyev is not looking at KGB or SNB that way. He's not looking at this body as something that would provide his security or the regime security. In fact, he's building another structure, parallel structure, which is very much reminiscent to what we have with Ramzan Kadyrov in Russia. So it will be a small mini army, basically. It is a National Guard, which is being very much strengthened now, where his son-in-law and the father of son-in-law plays the major roles. Mm. So you saw Ramzan's visit to Uzbekistan. You saw all these hugs and kisses. And they're very much looking that direction for the things that used to be done, accomplished by a former SNB, will be transferred to National Guard.
Okay,
which will be armed, of course, and will not deal with day to day issues.
Okay,
as a whole.
Yeah, Bruce, let me take your thought on this. What Alisher is saying that Mirziyoyev's intention is to make security, the one which was headed by Inayatov, to make it irrelevant. So how do you see this is happening, and do you see any backlash from the Inayatov support base for this? I mean, they have a lot to lose if that is the direction Mirziyoyev takes.
Certainly the SNB is going to be weakened. Now, considering the neighborhood that Uzbekistan is in, there's always a question of how much do you want this organization, this entity weakened.
But it should
never have the kind of power that it had under Inayatov. There's no doubt about it. But there's also no doubt about the fact there are security threats.
But
there.
I'm saying, can Mirziyoyev do that without any backlash?
Well, you know, he's removed key people from the SNB long before Inayatov. So anyone that might have even had that would have been able to gather some kind of group together or have sufficient power to oppose such a decision has been removed and moved somewhere else, neutralized essentially. So there is no way they can do anything right now. It's going to be a weaker organization. There's no one. They will move right over to Mirziyoyev seamlessly from Inayatov.
Okay. Now,
Mohammed, I was going to suggest a few, you know, practical things that Mirziyoyev can do. I agree with Bruce and Alisher. I think, you know, if he wants to weaken or regulate the SNB going forward, and to do it in a way, as Bruce said, it has to be done in a way that, you know, appears also, you know, from a security standpoint, I guess, is credible and is not, you know, totally taking down the SNB. I guess that would be unrealistic from the standpoint of needing to provide security, I mean, from the hardliner perspective. But I think if he shoots down the middle, Mirziyoyev should push for a law, as he's mentioned in his speech, that would regulate the SNB. So you have to set up an actual law on the security services that would regulate its conduct. I think the idea of parliamentary oversight of the SNB, which is the trend we've been seeing with parliament taking a more prominent role, at least on paper, with a number of different government agencies, would be a smart policy and, you know, more in line with democracy. And then there are some other ideas, for example, the use of the extremism statute to prosecute so many people willy-nilly for the most vague and overbroad reasons. Article 159, Article 244, extremism is completely undefined. Terrorism can literally be anything. You have, even during the Mirziyoyev period, at least two journalists, one writer, that are currently being prosecuted for extremism. So you need to drop those cases. I mean, there are a number of things that Mirziyoyev could do, again, very quickly to take this agency and put it under scrutiny. But I think, you know, you can do all of those things, but if you are going to really change the DNA of Uzbekistan and move it from an authoritarian political system, you're going to also have to have a free press that's reporting on the activities of these secretive agencies to make sure that they aren't able to do what they've been doing the last two decades. So that's the harder ask, in a way, is to have journalists doing their job and have just a more open society in general, a civil society that's able to ask questions, go to press conferences, make officials that work at the SNB uncomfortable. So, I mean, I think that's the larger process. without which we can't really see a different Uzbekistan emerging.
Thank you very much, Steve. Actually, we were stuck with Inayatov, so you brought us to a little bit of a different topic. Katie, here in Washington, for example, whenever we have any Uzbekistan conference taking place, there are people who comes out and say that Mirziyoyev actually wants to do lots of good things about the country, but whenever he does, he faces resistance from Inayatov. Now Inayatov is gone. Where does this put Mirziyoyev now?
Well, if Inayatov was the only problem, then you should see a quicker pace of reforms. Mm. Of course, Inayatov was not the only problem. And so it's removing one big boulder, but I think there's still a lot of rocks in the road. And so Mirziyoyev is saying a lot of the right things. Certainly in his December end of the year massive opus, when he criticized security services and he mentioned, you know, they've been operating under regulations from 26 years ago and everything has become a national security interest, and sort of says that in a negative fashion, like this is not how this should be set up. There has to be other movement to back up more than just the idea. So I think, as Steve mentioned, dealing with some of these political prisoners, reassessing those cases and letting people out of jail is a good step. Changing and actually defining extremism is a good step. And actually applying the laws as they should be applied to protect citizens' rights. And so Inayatov was one big problem. And I think he also, as was mentioned before, sort of the connection with Uzbekistan's economy. And if you look at sort of the package of reforms and things that Mirziyoyev has targeted for reforms, a lot of them root back to the economy, drawing in international investment, ginning up innovation and entrepreneurs within Uzbekistan. In order to accomplish those things, Inayatov also had to start to have less power. Whether that just switches over to somebody else's hands, I think is something that could be of concern. And if this all just, now it's just Mirziyoyev's people who are controlling the black market, then, you know, it has much changed. But I think, again, Mirziyoyev is saying the right things and doing some of the right things, but there's still a lot of room for skepticism. And I think in terms of, as mentioned by Steve, freedom of the press and things like that are important accountability measures. And right now, there's certainly more conversation in Uzbekistan and about Uzbekistan, but still within sort of this umbrella of things that Mirziyoyev has essentially blessed as appropriate topics. And some of these topics are really good to start talking about. But, you know, if we're only talking about the things that are within this umbrella of approved topics, you're still sort of censoring what the discussion can be on.
Yeah. Just to follow up on that, feel free to continue. Now Inayatov is gone. So what could be Mirziyoyev's excuse for not going into an implementation stage of some of the nice things that he has been saying so far?
Well, the excuses start to fade away the more people you replace. Because then, you know, if you've just replaced them with people who are also bad at the jobs, then it's starting to become his problem as opposed to sort of Karimov holdovers. So I think it starts to remove some of the excuses. I mean, so if the reform effort is genuine, then you should start seeing some of that progress. But you're also going to run into sort of a manpower problem. You have entire systems of people who are trained in a certain way of doing things and starting to rejigger how they go about doing their jobs is not an easy task.
Mm. Bruce, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, you know, that's obviously, I would like to see them push a lot of reforms through. There's certainly a lot they could accomplish without really jeopardizing any of the stability of the system. You know, Mirziyoyev, every time I think about the possibility of greater media freedom, greater human rights respect, things like that, I keep thinking, you know, Mirziyoyev, for all his good talk, was Karimov's prime minister for a long time, you know, 13 years. And is he really the guy that we see right now? Ali Sheer said more than a year ago, I remember him saying, we won't see the real Mirziyoyev until Inayatov's gone.
Actually, that's exactly, I was thinking when you were talking, yeah.
You know, I'm waiting to see. Is he going to keep talking about this stuff a year from now, or was this just politically expedient in some way? And you know, we're going to move on to other topics within the next few months.
Yeah, Alisher, back up your 1 year old idea now. Now Inayatov is gone. So what kind of Mirziyoyev you are expecting to see going forward?
We're already starting to see the real Mirziyoyev. First of all, his language, which is very harsh and very, in some way, rude. He's calling his ministers rats, you know, the whole body, the whole financial body, he called them rats, you know. It's an unacceptable language, I don't know, for a president, for public speeches, and it was in a State of the Union address. Or calling someone traitor and officially. That's the first test, yeah? So his language is becoming more, you know, it's getting a sort of a harshness, you know. People like it, but is it good? I don't know. The other thing, problems are not resolved. The same thing, shortage of gas, shortage of electricity, huge unemployment. The jobs are not created in any way. So banking system is scrambling, you know, everything is bad, and Mirziyoyev is saying it. And the only excuse he has, it's not me, it's Karimov did it, it's not my job. So now that will come very fast on him. The other thing, which is another test for real Mirziyoyev, is the place of his relatives in the structure. We already seen his daughter coming as a deputy minister, as far as I know, but she's in the ministry already, yeah? So he's both of his son-in-laws surrounding him. So one is the security chief, another is, you know, chief of presidential administration. We don't know how many other relatives he has. Another fact is his friends are all there already. So the other thing that we're seeing that the people from his region, Jizak, are increasingly taking over the power structures. So that's the real Mirziyoyev. Probably some of those things were balanced so far by powerful Inoyatov around. Yeah. So now that's balance is gone. No check and balance left. Nothing can stop him to move further, to get harsher language. His first step was under this situation where Inoyatov was there, was a hell of a lot of populism. So now he's popular. Okay, what's next? What are you going to do with your populism? How can you turn around it and make something, you know, reforms or anything? It's going to be difficult. There's no genuine reforms happened under Mirziyoyev. First year in power, of course, there would be very few questions. And he's not under immediate accountability. It will need some time.
Yeah, it will need some time. But again, now this is his Uzbekistan. Inoyatov is gone, his rivals are gone. What happens now, this is his own making going forward. Now, what is that, Steve, maybe we can, we also have to end the discussion. So what is that we would be looking at to test Mirziyoyev now going forward?
Well, yeah, I think Mirziyoyev has to be held to a standard of the law, of the international obligations that Uzbekistan has signed and has taken on. Mm-hmm. I mean, what we shouldn't be doing, you know, is... Obviously, we understand that Central Asia is a complicated society. We see clan structures. Sometimes we over-exaggerate their importance. We see a lot of corruption. But the one thing that we, as at least from a human rights standpoint, have to do is hold Uzbekistan to the standards that it needs to adhere to under the law. So I think Mirziyoyev's, the claims of reform, I think we have to test each claim and assess each one of them. So, you know, we're starting, for example, with freedom of speech, because in a way it's the logical place to begin. Mm-hmm. There's just no way that the reform agenda that Mirziyoyev is touting can be successful unless there's a relaxing of restrictions on free speech and a free press and a more open society. So I think we start there, we look at whether or not journalists are going to continue to languish in prison and human rights defenders are going to be in prison. You know, he signed a decree also in November that banned the use of torture in criminal cases. And that was a repeat of an earlier decree that Karimov had signed only in practice or only in name, never got implemented. So will Mirziyoyev actually move towards making the criminal justice system work well? You know, we heard a lot of claims, and I did on the ground as well, from a lot of people that, you know, now we have video cameras in interrogation rooms. Things are a lot more efficient. Mm. We're really modernizing Uzbekistan and making it more humane. And we have to really scrutinize. We have to get inside the prisons. We have to see if the conditions are changing. We have to look at the approach of the state to religion. You know, there's a lot of also activity, frenetic activity, about how Mirziyoyev's changing the relationship to believers and you know, muezzins being able to make the prayer call in Tashkent from mosques, and will there be a more open and a more sophisticated understanding or relationship of faith and belief? So there's many, many areas, and I think we just have to test them in accordance with Uzbekistan's obligations. That's going to take a lot of work, I think, from the international community. I think the key is to not let up and make sure that a lot of outside observers, a lot of scholars, journalists, UN observers are constantly going into Uzbekistan and raising these issues and helping support the process to the extent it exists.
With some final points, let's end the discussion. Katie, Bruce, you guys have been quiet in the second part of the discussion, but the final point is, so what are the signs that you guys are looking at to see where Mirziyoyev is going with his unchallenged authority now?
I think the proof is going to be in the pudding, as they say. In a similar sense to what Steve said, you know, we'll know because you can look at the specific things that have been reformed, and as time has passed, we all, you know, at the end of every article, we all get to say, you know, time will tell. Well, time will tell. So we have to kind of go back to decrees that were issued last year and say, you know, what is the progress on this? I know, you know, for example, on the issue of exit visas, I think that was decreed to end by the beginning of 2019. So in early 2019, we reconvene this podcast and we say, has this been abolished? Has this system done what it said it was going to do? And if yes, then good. If no, then all the words meant nothing. So it's sort of, and that has to be applied to each individual reform and promise, because some of them will go forward because they economically make sense. And so Uzbekistan and Mirziyoyev are really sort of targeting the economy. But they've also said a number of things on the softer side in terms of security and people being able to, you know, live their lives. We have to ask those questions. And I think we also need to listen to Uzbeks in Uzbekistan about how this is happening and playing out in practice. Because on the high level, all these words can be said, and you can have a high-level visitor have a very positive experience, but your average Uzbek on the street, are they still having trouble with the secret police?
Bruce, your thoughts on this?
What I would really want would be to see, you know, I'm with Steve, I'd like to see greater freedom of speech and open discussion of some of the problems Uzbekistan had. Maybe that they'd find solutions from unexpected quarters if they do that. What I would take for the moment is, Katie mentioned the scrapping of exit visas, absolutely, and also the reduction of restrictions for obtaining visas to get into Uzbekistan. And I'm not saying that just because it would benefit me personally, but I would like to see them, you know, open up the country to more outside visitors without all the forms and necessary details and invitations right now that you need to even have a chance to get in.
Okay, thank you very much.
Just the last point, there's a lot of attention to Uzbek security services, how they will go, and the rights of the people. Of course, what Steve is mentioning, freedom of speech and press is very vital. And there's one more very important element that we never seen happening in any case. It's independent courts. We absolutely don't have them, and probably before starting reforming any security agency, the reforming of judiciary and courts would be would be more vital at this point.
Okay.
And a free legal profession.
Yeah, good point. Thank you, Steve Sorlo, Central Asia researcher for Human Rights Watch, Catherine Putz, editor of Diplomat, Bruce Panier, and Alisher Siddiq, my colleagues at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time in touch today.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.